Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you're listening in on DRN1. Bounce Back is a fun talkback show. Today we have Cameron the Magician and Michael Connell, a comedian and juggler. Welcome, guys.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having us on the show.
It's a bit special as well because Michael's actually talking to us via phone. He's in Adelaide. So thanks for that, Michael.
No problem. Yeah. The magic of technology, right?
I know, it's great. And Michael, what has it been like for you in Adelaide with all the COVID stuff?
it's been a crazy time. I had a baby a little before the lockdown. And so I've spent 5 months basically in a house, in a small two-bedroom apartment with a crying, screaming baby, and going outside has been illegal. So that's been fun. Now I've done like 5 gigs or so since they've relaxed the restrictions. It's interesting doing gigs in socially distanced sort of conditions, but things seem to be like South Australia, we've had very few cases for months. So yeah, we've been very lucky. So, things are sort of returning. It's very weird because, yeah, what a roller coaster ride.
It has been insane. Like, Michael, I'm going to impart some of my motherly stuff to you right now.
Oh, yes. Please,
I've got three boys. So my take a break moment was have a shower. That's for you and your wife. Make sure you do those. You can't, you need some breaks from crying.
Absolutely. Like, she goes to sleep and I'm so tired. I'm like, I'm exhausted. But then I'm like, this is the only chance I'm going to have some time to myself. She goes to bed at 9 and then I stay up till like midnight, you know, just surfing the internet, looking at Facebook or whatever. And then she wakes up just as I'm putting my head down on the pillow. And here we go again.
I'm going to ask you guys some background questions as well. So I'm really curious, how did you both meet each other? Cameron, do you want to share that?
Yeah, we met through a common workplace. We worked in children's hospitals, basically, you know, entertaining the sick kids, keeping them all distracted with what we call positive psychology. Michael came over from, where were you at the time? Were you in Melbourne then or?
Yeah, when we first met, I think I was coming from Melbourne.
Yes.
I've moved around a lot in the last, like, 5-6 years.
So, yeah, he came over for a little bit. He had some shows in Perth, so he got a couple of shifts in our hospital and we met. And it was love at first sight. He taught me some juggling. I taught him some magic skills and we just kind of got along, had a pretty similar humor. And so became pretty close friends. He was only there for a few days. So then he packed up and headed back and then just stayed in contact and would see each other occasionally because there's some interstate travel with the job. And and then we just kind of stayed in contact with each other and we were like, hey, you want to do a show? And then we put together a fringe show and that went pretty well and yeah.
What was your fringe show called?
So we did a show called Juggling Versus Magic. So I'm a magician. Yeah. Michael is a juggler and comedian. And basically we came up with this idea to figure out once and for all what is the cooler job. Is it being a juggler? Is it being a magician? So we decided, look, we'll have 3 rounds. I do a trick, he does a trick. And at the end of it, the kids vote for who they like the best. The winner stands there in glory with a big bucket and they get to pour a bucket of slime over the loser's head.
Oh, that's wicked.
So yeah, it was lots of fun. I think we did like 26 shows and I think the final score, what was it, Michael? Like 18 to 8 or something like that?
Yeah.
It was for magic.
It was closer than I thought it might have turned out.
Well, that's the thing.
We did a lot of shows that kids would come in with like magic t-shirts and they got like Harry Potter wands and stuff and they're like magic.
Yeah.
And most shows it was like a close win to magic.
Yeah, it was usually like two to three votes different. But we were both, before we started, like I was like, oh man, I'm going to lose every show. Like no one's going to like magic. And then Michael's like, oh man, I'm going to lose every show. No one's going to want juggling. And then it was pretty even. Each show was like one or two votes different. I got to a point where I was just like, oh man, like, is this just a crapshoot? Like, is this completely rolling the dice and they just don't care? But it was really fun.
I think, you know, there's a lot of magic, movies like Harry Potter, you know, Lord of the Rings, whatever. They've got magic in it and kids love magic. And I thought, oh, there's no juggling movies. But then, like, what is it, the Greatest Show came out. And
yes,
I was like, oh, The Greatest Showman. Yeah, The Greatest Showman. I was like, oh, this is going to tip the scales, but hardly any juggling in it. So it didn't really help.
Oh, The Greatest Showman was actually fantastic, wasn't it? It was a really
I still
good
haven't
show.
Seen it. Oh. I hate Hugh Jackman, so I just refute. No, not really. I just haven't had a chance to see it yet.
It's brilliant.
I went along to see that with my wife, and the whole movie, like, he's like a dreamer who wants to achieve things despite, you know, having no money. And my wife's nudging me the whole movie, like, that's you, you're doing it. She's been very supportive of us doing this show. Actually, me and Cameron, we were working together. We'd always been like, oh, we should do a Fringe show together. We should, you know, because he's got all these great kids magic entertaining skills. I've got all these great kids juggling entertaining skills. We're like, we gotta do it together. And we're like, how are we gonna do this? And my wife, she came on as our director, and she thought up the idea for the show. She was like, hey, you both kind of like pro wrestling. And we're like, yeah. And she's like, why not do like a pro wrestling style throwdown juggling versus magic? We're like, that's a great idea.
That's
but then she, yeah, she came on as our director, and she sort of, she was working behind the scenes. She was selling tickets. She was doing the marketing. She was running around. Plus, holding our baby during the entire show.
Wow.
Literally,
So she did a great job with that, you know.
Gosh, and your baby, what, was under a year at that stage? Or
she was under a year old, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Well done, Mum and Dad. That's pretty hardcore.
That being said, they are very lucky. She is the most peaceful, at least she was the most peaceful baby I'd ever met. Barely cried. She just would smile the whole time, like, yeah, I'm fine. You do your show. We'll talk after.
Yeah, she's a good bubby. She's a very good baby. She's going to have a warped perception of reality because her dad's always juggling. Her mum's, you know, a singer and a musician. She's got all these musical skills. She's going to go to other kids, you know, houses after school and be like, what did your dad do? What does he do? Magic tricks? Does he do backflip? They're going to be like, he's an accountant.
Yeah, where's your dad's unicycle? Why doesn't he have a unicycle inside?
Yeah, exactly.
How did you guys start in, like, what you're doing?
Michael, you started first, so you go. You've been doing it a while.
All right. I always wanted to be interesting, I guess. I always liked telling. For the comedy, I grew up in the country and I never really saw stand-up. But I always wanted to be, like, on stage telling people funny stories. And so I would be in a lot of youth theatre, a lot of acting classes, you know, that amateur theatre, community theatre, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I thought I wanted to be an actor for a while, but then I went to drama camp. There were kids who could, like, cry on command, and I was like, oh, that's really not me. I don't know if you remember this, like, if you're around my age, there was, you know, Tony Robinson, Baldrick from Blackadder?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to do, like, kid shows on the ABC, and he used to, like, it was just him talking directly to camera, walking around. And I was like, that's what I want to be, which is essentially stand-up for kids.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do that for ages. And I thought, oh, you know, I was doing acting, but I was like, I don't really want to do the funny part. I was like, maybe there's something else I could get into. And I was walking down the street one day, and there was all these kids on unicycles at the local servo, and they were pumping up their tires. I was like, what's this? What's going on? And they're like, oh, we're from the local alternative school. We have a circus class after, like, an after-school program. And I'm like, can I join? And they're like, well, probably not, because you're not a student there. But I talked to their teacher, and their teacher was like, yeah, these kids are lazy. I'm gonna let you join, and you, because you're really keen, you'll sort of like, he wanted to use me to sort of like, you know,
motivation.
Shame them a bit. Yeah, motivate them into learning. Like, he wanted to be like, look, Michael can juggle. He doesn't even go to this school. What are you doing, right? But they all mucked around and, you know, slacked off while I learned to juggle and unicycle and other things.
Oh, that's great.
And then I did, like, kids' parties and stuff and, you know, school fates and things like that until I was about, I got pretty heavily into juggling until I was about 20, so from about
14 to 20, 21.
The best time to be a juggler.
Yeah. Absolutely. As you get older, you start going, this is a really, there's a big overlap between like juggling and sort of the autism OCD sort of behavioral problems. And so, yeah, I just like, I'm getting great at all these tricks, but I'm not really entertaining people. And I realized what I liked doing was mucking tricks up and getting a laugh more.
Yeah.
And then when I was about 16, 17, my mum took me to see a comedy show in the comedy festival. Dave O'Neill was on stage. He did a whole routine about his dad cleaning their pool in his underpants. I was like, oh, that's hilarious. That's what I want to do. So I did that. I got into stand-up and did that from like, good 10, 15 years. And then, yeah, just increasingly I was like, I look like every other comedian ever. You're always like, what's my point of difference?
What do you mean? You're a 30-something-year-old white guy. There's not many of those around at all.
Yeah, exactly. I'm really filling that gap in the comedy world. But I was like, I thought, well, look, no, there's no juggling comedians. And there's like jugglers who are funny, but they're like, the focus is very much on the juggling and they do a few jokes as well. The jugglers, some of them are absolutely amazing, but they tend to share the same jokes. All the jokes are recycled. Yeah. So I'm like, I can write and I can juggle. Why not combine the two? So I started doing that. And then, yeah, I became Australia's juggling comedian, I guess.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's actually a huge journey that you've had then. So, and it sounds like it's kind of been mapped out for you, especially I've never seen unicycles at a service station before.
Yeah, it's weird how it all fits together.
That's fantastic.
I'm sometimes surprised, like I'm like, oh man, what do I do now? And then I'm like, oh yeah, I can juggle. And then I start doing it. I've got one more skill. And then I don't know, you have to always respond to whatever life brings you, right? So right now I'm in the lockdown and I'm like, what can I do? I can't do any live shows. Mm-hmm. So I've really been trying to learn a second language. I'm trying to learn Spanish. And I'm also writing material about that. So I might be,
get a new show out of
Australia's
it.
Best juggling
bilingual unicycle.
On a unicycle, yeah, exactly. If you can't be the best, be the only, right? I'm just niching it down ever more.
You've got a core 12 fans, but they go to every show.
Yeah, exactly. There's 12 Spanish juggling comedy fans. They're going to love my material.
And Cameron, what about yourself? Where did your story begin?
I guess same thing sort of in terms of starting off as an actor. So I went to John Curtin as a drama student. I was one of those people who could fake cry on command. Sorry, Michael. And a similar thing, like I always gravitated to the comedy side of things. You know, in primary school, I was a bit of the class clown as well. So I think that's a bit of a cliche with comedians, but I'm living the cliche. And in high school, I remember, we'd always have serious dramatic things and I just never really enjoyed it. But as soon as it was comedy, I was, here I am in my element now. I remember we had to do, it was like you had to do your final presentation. So you had to do a silent piece and then you added sound slowly into it. And I didn't care. So I was kind of over it at that point. So I just decided I was going to be a lemur and just at the time didn't know really what a lemur sounded like. So I just started making like huffing noises and everyone's laughing, but it's meant to be a dramatic silent piece and everyone's just like cracking up laughing. And the teacher was very angry with me, but I was like, you know what? I made the right choice here. So after school, I went and did some acting, children's theater, bits and bobs here, some extra work on a couple of TV shows, nothing too fancy. But I always just, enjoyed the comedy side of stuff. I've always been a big fan of watching comedy movies, stand-up acts. Comedy Channel on Foxtel was sort of my go-to back in the day. And then as well as that, I just had magic in the background. I've been a huge fan of Penn & Teller as far as I can remember. I've learnt my first magic trick from one of their TV specials. And through primary school, I had two or three magic tricks that I would do occasionally. They weren't good at all, but there were tricks I did. And then all through high school, I realized that I liked not being beaten up. So I stopped magic for a while. And then I went to work at Adventure World, the theme park, and I was up at the roller coaster one day, and they have these cue cards, just little cards that let you keep track of how long people have been waiting in line. And I was just doing this thing where you put it in front of your hand and then you like flip it around so that it disappears behind your hand, and then you flip it back, and as you turn your hand over, it looks like your hand's completely empty, but you have a card in it. And one of my friends was like, "Oh, do you do magic?" I said, "Oh, a little tiny bit." And we just started talking about magic. And the next day I brought a pack of cards to work and we just started mucking around between cycles. And I remembered how much I enjoyed magic. So I just started learning magic again. And like a month later, I put up an ad on Gumtree, you know, $50 birthday parties, and had a few bookings and terrible shows. They were real bad looking back. I remember I was trying to do this disappearing 20 cent coin trick and I completely messed it up. So it was just 3 minutes of me talking while I tried to find a 20 cent coin in my piece of coin in my pocket. But that grew slowly. Just kind of every year I would just up my price a little bit and try and be a little bit more glamorous, buy some new toys to play with and get kind of more fancy. And last year I went full time with it, which was exciting. So about October I left my job and focused on magic, and that was doing well. And then January we had our first Fringe show, and that went really well, you know, 4.5 stars, I can't complain.
Well done.
Thank you. Then I went over to Adelaide, and while I'm in Adelaide doing the show with Michael, getting these text messages and seeing all this stuff pop up on Facebook, like, oh, there's some weird COVID thing taking over, everyone's buying all the toilet paper up now, be careful. I'm like, oh, this will pass by the time I get back. And then I arrive in Perth and it's a ghost town. Like, no one's out. I'm like, oh, no. And I had like four really big gigs lined up and they all emailed like one after the other, like, hey, we're going to have to cancel now. I'm just like, oh, no, because that's like all the money that I was expecting, because I knew Fringe wasn't going to be a huge success just because of the flights and the cost involved. So I was like, okay, that's cool. I can offset it with the money I'm going to earn when I get back. And then they all canceled. So that was very exciting. But long story short, yes, I started off being a bit of a clown in school, and that turned into comedy, which turned into magic, which turned into my full-time job.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. And Cameron, were you eligible for the JobKeeper then?
Yeah, I applied for Job Seeker because JobKeeper wasn't a thing yet. And then I threw 20 hours to Centrelink. I finally got through that. And then like a week after that, I finally applied properly for JobKeeper because they were being difficult, and they needed a bit of information I didn't have, and so I had to send away for this to get that, typical, you know. And then finally I got that, so I was actually on JobKeeper and JobSeeker at the same time. I asked them, I said, am I allowed to do this? They're like, look, as long as you declare what you're earning, you'll do that, and we just won't send you any money. I was like, okay. Because I'd already signed up to do, I'm doing my education diploma at university. So I'd signed up for that before all this happened as well.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, you know, you can just swap it over to AusStudy when that time comes around. So I'm like, okay, I'll guess I'll hold on to it then. So now I'm having to like lodge three different forms every month and just to get a little bit of money just to hold me over. But luckily it all worked out, because if I didn't have the JobKeeper, I would be not as grounded as I am currently. I would think I would have been a bit more frantically searching for something, or turning magic tricks on the corner for whatever cash people have. But
you both naturally gravitated towards children, it seems. You do adults, I'm assuming, as well. And do you both do a bit of corporate as well?
Yeah, I would say, especially early on, I was probably 70%, if not 80% kid parties, and then, you know, the occasional roaming magic gig. As I go on, it seems that as I develop those corporate ties, that kind of takes over. So I'd say I'm probably about 50-50 kids right now. But that will vary throughout the year. You find that there's just more birthdays on towards the end of the year, and then come New Year, it's all about the corporate events.
Yeah.
That's me at least. What about you, Michael?
Yeah, it's hard. I did a lot of kids' parties in high school. And then as I got older, I was like, no, in my 20s, I was like, I'm a serious performer. I want to be taken seriously. I'm not doing kids' parties. And I stopped for years from doing comedy gigs and whatnot. And just, increasingly, over the last couple of years, I've been like,
kids' parties are great, right? Like, it's good, regular pay.
They get a bum rap.
Really nice. Yeah, they get a horrible rap. And I'm like, performing for kids is awesome. I should do this way more. Like, you go out and do comedy. Like, I love comedy. I love doing stand-up for adults at night.
Yeah.
And I'll always do it. But some the working conditions, it's just appalling sometimes, right? You come out, you do these shows, four drunks, you know, pay is horrible. If there's pay, sometimes you're just, you know, testing material and you get nothing, right?
Yeah.
And then you go out. Yeah, over my, you come to a kid's show. Oh, there's pay. You know, the kids really enjoy the show.
Yeah,
you
the get kids are usually less drunk.
They're usually less drunk. Yeah, exactly.
Well, Michael, you know, when you come back to Perth, you'll have to do one of our comedy gigs with us. We've got four rooms, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you have to.
In 3 years when you're allowed over.
Exactly. I always love doing Perth. I think Perth's got an awesome comedy scene.
It does.
You guys, like, for the population size, you guys really punch above your weight. You know? It's amazing. Like, how many people are in Perth?
Like, 100.
Yeah. 100, not 100. Come on. There's like a million?
I think it's like 1.2. It's not very 1.2
many. 1.2 million,
that's
right?
That's WA as a whole as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we're at half capacity. Our fourth venue hasn't actually launched yet. That's launching in October, but we've got the Chow's Hotel as well now, and that's a once a month venue. But basically everywhere's at half capacity because of COVID, and it's okay, but it does make it a little bit more financially difficult for people in the arts. So,
true, yeah. And it must be hard. I'm looking towards. I lost a year's worth of gigs in about a week in March. You know, like, everyone called and cancelled or emailed and just was like, yeah, we're pulling the plug on this one. But, yeah, looking at next year, I'm ringing around, talking to venues for Fringe, and I'm like, you know, festivals and stuff. I'm like, are you interested in doing stuff? And they're like, well, we might be. We might not be. We don't know what's going on. Like, planning is impossible. You know,
it's a really weird situation. And you invest a lot of hours into the planning process of things.
Yeah. Like, Fringe, the venues don't want to take the risk because they'll get cancelled, but then you don't want to take the risk either in case the event gets cancelled.
Well,
so
everyone's
sort of in this stalemate where no one can take the first move, you know?
Yeah. Well, we're going ahead with Fringe, so that is happening in Perth, which is exciting, and we'll just keep plodding along and pray that it doesn't, because we are going to invest a lot of hours into it.
Yeah.
And hopefully we stay in our little bubble here.
Yeah. It will literally be the Perth Fringe because there'll be no one else coming in, so that'll be fun.
I'm hoping you guys will open up the borders, and because, come on, Perth's had no cases. Adelaide's had, like, no cases for months. I think we've had, like, two maybe. But, look, come on.
I think we'll do some exclusive travel from Adelaide to Perth only.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the rest of the country.
Exactly.
We've got to make work.
Yeah, kid shows, they need to happen, guys.
Yeah, well, we've got round two of Juggling vs. Magic to bring to the people. Like, they got to see
it. That's right. It's an essential business, right?
Exactly. I'm sure you're eligible for the exemption, right?
Yeah,
I reckon. Reason for travel, getting slimed.
Yeah.
Kids' well-being, okay?
Yeah, exactly. We're a crucial, crucial part of the system.
Yep. All right, so, guys, what has been your biggest learning curve or bomb to date?
Bombs, huh? So early on, when I started doing birthday parties, I had I learned this trick. It's like my closer. Basically, I get 10 sewing needles. I swallow the needles in front of everyone, show that my mouth is completely empty, and then I get a bit of thread and pull them all up. And I was ready to do this amazing trick in front of everyone, and I get a volunteer up, and they have to make sure the needles are real, and they are real. So, you know, I usually get them to, like, thread the needle through the fabric of the skin and just tap it on something hard. And I just say, okay, have a look, make sure it's real. Don't bend it. Don't snap it.
Yeah.
And this woman comes up. She's like, oh, a needle. Snaps it just right in half. I'm like, well, I can't do this trick anymore because I need these needles. Like, if they're broken, that's not going to work. So I'm just like, okay. And then I just turned it into this like disappearing needle trick, and it was okay, but everyone was confused, and I was just like, oh God, like, I don't know how I could be any more direct in my instruction of don't bend it or snap it. It was as if she intentionally did it, because she looked me in the eye and just bent it in half and it just snap. I just felt my heart drop as she's just ruined my entire like ending trick. I'm like, okay, that was annoying. So that's taught me to not trust people anymore when it comes to tricks and be very, very direct. Magic is one of those things where you kind of can get away with being a bit of a mean person, because you can. That's the persona you take. You know, you can make a few jokes about people like stand here, don't move. You know, don't do anything I don't tell you to, and that's kind of in the character. So that's lucky for that. Because if you, the old saying, you know, you give them an inch, they take a mile. They will either make the show all about them, or they will damage your very expensive props. So it's good to just be in control, basically, at this point. Or just use cards, because if they get damaged, it's fine. You can replace a pack of cards for much cheaper.
Yeah. And what about yourself, Michael?
I'm trying to think of one of the many bombs that I've had over my career. Cameron's story made me think of this time when I was doing kids' parties back in high school. I used to sometimes work with another kid who was a juggler, friend of mine. People love in juggling, they love danger props. So they love fire, they love knives, right? But for jugglers, it's kind of boring, because juggling a knife is no harder than juggling a club, juggling fires. Just the main danger is like being dirty, you know, it's all the soot and stuff. so it's not really a challenge, but people love watching it, right? So I was like, I don't know. I was kind of on the fence. I was unsure. But he was like, yeah, let's do it. Definitely. Let's do fire tricks. And he would do fire breathing. You know that trick? So it's like he'd take a mouthful of the fuel, and then he'd spit it across a burning torch and it'd make a big fireball come out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Audiences loved it. Very impressive. But anyway, we're doing this party. He's juggling the fire torches. He's got a mouthful of fuel. And I said something dumb, some silly joke, and he laughed. And he coughs, and it like comes out his nose, basically. And just all this, he used to mix like methylated spirits, citronella, and a lighter fluid into this mix. And it all just comes out of his nose. And we had to be like, all right, we're going to stop the show for a bit and go eat some yogurt and drink milk. And
oh, my God, how was his nasal cavity?
he was fine. He just had to, like, you know, do a lot of pouring water down his nose and rinse it out. But after that, I was like, nah, I don't care how much audiences like it. I'm only doing – I'm going to be a funny juggler, not a dangerous juggler.
Oh, no. all right, what was your best moment as a performer?
Ooh, best moment. It's been best so many.
I've done a lot of things I loved, and I'm always doing gigs. Oh, man, I can't believe I get to do this. This is my life. I'm always so grateful. But I always loved the gig that I did with Weird Al Yankovic.
That's really cool.
That was super awesome. Like I've been a fan of his like since I was a kid. You know, as a kid I had all his albums. I'd always listen to his songs. I loved it. Then I was living up in Queensland. I got this email saying we could be Weird Al's opening act, and I'm like, this is a prank, right? the email was like, it's in 2 weeks, and I'm like, I don't think Weird Al is going to be calling someone in 2 weeks. They're going to plan this out. It's going to be a bigger deal. But I'm like, yeah, sure. I write back, yeah, no problem. If you book the flights, I'll come down and do it. And they totally did. And I got on the flight, and all the whole way, I'm like, they're going a long way to get this joke. but then I showed up. It was a gig in Melbourne at the Palais Theatre, and yeah, like 3,000 people there. It was a great gig. It was organized, you know, because he's a musical comedian. It was organized by a music touring company instead of like a comedy company.
Yeah.
And they ran it like a musical show, so like a band would, right? Like I was like the warm up band.
Right.
So they were like, you got a 20-minute set, go out on stage. They didn't have an MC. I just walked out. I got one of the sound techs to go, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Michael Connell. And then I just walked out in 20 minutes. And then they had like a 20-minute, half-hour interval between me and Weird Al. I think so that they could like, so they were planning to take all my drums off stage and, you know, change the fold back and all this stuff. And I'm like, guys, I have literally no equipment. It's just me and a microphone. But yeah, then he came on and it was an amazing show. He killed it. Like, he must have been performing with that band for like 30 years or something. They were so tight. Like, it wasn't just the best comedy band I'd ever seen. It was like one of the best bands I'd ever seen. And then we hung out at backstage. I got to meet him very briefly, but he was really, really nice guy. And yeah, I don't know. It was just a real dream come true to get to meet one of my heroes.
That's a really super cool story.
I'm jealous. I've been a fan of him my whole life. Yeah. Well, I'll be a little bit nicer. Might be a bit biased, but the last tour I did with Michael in Adelaide, our final show was at this like big theater. We had, you know, the full background and lighting and the whole, yeah, it was really cool. And I remember just during the show on the wings, I'm just watching and listening to the crowds. I'm like, oh, they're reacting so well. And then I'd come out and do my bit, and then every joke is hitting. And, you know, because from the first show to the last show, we added probably 15 minutes extra. Yeah. We're just coming up with bits that we did over and over, and it's, you know, that's what doing shows is all about. And just every little thing we added in was hitting, and the tricks went off. The people we pulled up on stage were perfect. I had this one little girl, you probably remember it, Michael. I do one trick where I have a locked box.
Yeah.
And basically I put their signed card in it, and then I run around them dressed as a robber trying to break into this box. And the little girl, like, perfect on cue, grabs the box and starts running around the stage, and I'm here sprinting after her. It was perfect. And at the end of the show, you know, I happened to win by like one vote. It was like so close. We had to recount it. People were changing their votes. And then we, you know, Michael gets slimed, and I had to go straight off to the airport afterwards. So like frantically packing up. But like, as soon as everyone left, we do a little like hello at the end, because one of us is covered in slime, so we can't really go backstage yet. And the last people are going through, and we're just like, whew, just high five. It was like a perfect show.
Yeah.
And I just remember kind of just having that after show rush. I'm like, wow, like that's the best show we've done. It was the last show as well, so I'm really glad, because it would be a lot worse if it was this terrible show where everything missed, and then I just have this 4-hour flight home just like dwelling on the, oh man, why didn't I enunciate more, or why didn't I like pick the person next to that person? But that was really good. I think that's probably the best show I've had.
That's really beautiful.
It's really cool.
You know, in any sort of show, you guys probably get it as well. I absolutely love when the audience is coming and you don't know where their energy level's at.
Yep.
They're all over the show. But when they leave, there's this high vibration and everyone's happy, everyone's smiling, and you guys are doing that. So
yeah,
it's a great thing to experience.
What Michael and I have, we kind of just stumbled into it just because of our previous experience with work and how we do it. And we're never off. So people will come in, and we just automatically go to the, okay, people are here, let's be funny, let's be entertaining. So we do like a soft opening to the show.
Yeah.
So we'll do like silly warm-ups. Michael goes through like dexterity exercises he does for juggling, and I'll do like, you know, easy card tricks, you know, things like, you know, making one finger appear in the other hand, joke stuff. And that just warms people up, and it takes people out of that zone. They're no longer just sitting watching a show, they're in the show, they get to interact with it.
Mm.
And it just makes for such a nicer environment, because the shows that I've done, the shows that we did where we couldn't do that soft opening, it's so much harder to get them on your side. Like, it's not till mid show, second round, that they're even excited and clapping and laughing. But when you do this soft opening, they already know you, you're already friends with them at that point, so they're more inclined to laugh. So that's something that I've done. I've done a couple of solo shows since, and I've incorporated that into it, and it just makes such a difference.
Yeah.
So I think that's one of the biggest tips I've learned so far, is to like, you want to you want to get your audience on site as quick as possible. And it's as easy as talking to people and saying hello before your show. I mean, I'm sure at the higher levels, you know, when you're a big fancy movie star, yeah, get introduced, people know who you are, but like nothing gets you on site more than like seeing someone and being close to them. I mean, you can't do that so much anymore at the, with the current climate, but yeah, that was really good. So I think that's, yeah, one of the biggest takeaways I took from it.
It's so true. I'm actually, I know people can't see me, but I've got this huge smile on my face because Cameron's just said he's never off. The first show we've ever done with Cameron, he comes in and I'm a mum. So he comes in and he says, you know, I'm not feeling so good. I'm like, okay, are you all right? Are you going to be okay? He goes, well, I think I've got appendicitis. And I was like, oh, are you sure you're going to be okay to do the show? He goes, yep, yep. And you were amazing. You're an absolute pro. You entertained the parents. You entertained the kids. Everyone loved you. You still ran around. You still were yourself. Your humor was great. And then I check on you later, you know, are you okay? No, I'm in hospital.
I literally went from the gig to the doctor to the hospital to the surgery room. So, but the show must go on. You can't stop.
You were amazing, but I could not believe. Yeah, he did have appendicitis.
I was really hoping it was like, it's in this weird zone where I'm like, oh, I hope it's something embarrassing, like it's just trapped wind or something really, really innocuous that'll be fine. But no, it was full-blown appendicitis. They're like, yeah, you have what we in the business call a hot appendix, which means it's going to blow at any minute. So we got to get that out of you. But yeah.
I don't even know how you did the show as well as you did. You're amazing. Yeah,
sometimes it's like that though, isn't it? Like you're on stage, you've got the adrenaline pumping.
Exactly.
And then you get off stage, you're like, oh no, I'm definitely broken.
Yeah, exactly.
For both of you, what is your creative process like?
Yeah, okay.
For me, it's a bit hard now with the baby, so I'm getting up extra early and typing away on my computer.
Yeah.
I try to make an effort to be disciplined and write about an hour a day.
That's amazing.
Right now, baby, I don't know if I always do that, but try to force it.
Yeah.
And then sort of the juggling, I try and practice as well as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always trying to, push to a higher level with the tricks, so like a more difficult technical trick, and then the easier, the lower tricks will be easier. Does that make sense? So mm-hmm. I'm always, whenever I practice juggling, I'm trying to hit like five balls or, I'm working on five clubs right now because I know if I can get that, then doing like three clubs under the leg is going to be easier. So, yeah, try and do that. And then, just try and combine the two in another rehearsal later on as it gets closer to showtime.
Wow.
I'm less formal. I find my best work is on the cuff, like just kind of off the cuff rather, just making it up. So, and because of my work, a lot of my work is roaming magic, you know, going table to table or walking around different venues. So if I have an idea, I'm in a weird position where I can do the same 5-minute bit over and over and over all night. And so I'll have an idea at the start of the night, and by the end of it, it's a pretty well polished bit. And obviously, I mean, it's more to it than that. It would go on for weeks, but I just have this ability where I have short audiences over and over. With magic, I mean, I guess with juggling and comedy, you know, your stage bit is going to be a bit longer, and it's kind of more open, I guess, from my understanding, where you have, okay, this is the joke I'm going to tell, this is how I'm going to present it. But with the magic tricks, like, it has a very distinct start and finish.
Mm.
You don't get many magic tricks that are going to be longer than 2 minutes, because if you're doing this elaborate setup for this, you know, elaborate story, and you're associating all these different things with each card, and all, this king represents this and this represents that, and oh, they travel around, blah, 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 and you've done 7 minutes of exposition, and then was this your card? It's not a great investment of time for the output. So you want it to be, here's your card. Okay, I'm going to do something. Here's something you didn't expect to happen, and then here's your card.
Yeah.
So it happens a lot quicker. So you know, for, let's just say there's a 10-minute show, Michael can do, you know, a juggling bit, a comedy bit. But if I do a single card trick, that's like 1 minute.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll do that again. That's 2 minutes, which gets really tricky. So you have to, I guess, with the creative process, it's just coming up with a lot of different things and then varying them. With a single pack of cards, I could do a 1 hour, you know, children's show, but I could do 3 hours worth of roaming magic with one pack of cards, just because you have to know so many different tricks to be able to do for them. And a lot of magic is just varying what you already know. There's only so many moves you can do. You can make a card appear. You can get someone to pick a card. You can make a card disappear.
Mm.
But how do you do that in an interesting way? And so you'll just be sitting at home, get an idea. I went to one of the candy stores and bought a pack of like American gum, and they come in like the wrappers, like the strip gum. And I was like, oh, well, it'd be cool if a card appeared in the gum. So I just chewed all the gum, folded up a bunch of cards, put them into there, and like went to a gig and basically, yeah, got people to like pick a card, do this, do that. And then at the end, I would offer them some gum. They'd pull out the gum and it'd be their card.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So, you know, you just get an idea and you try it out, and yeah, you get to try it out and over and over and over again for the night. And if it works, you chuck it into the repertoire. If not, these people will never see you again. So it doesn't matter if they saw a terrible trick. Yeah.
And I don't think they're going to remember one terrible trick over all the tricks.
Exactly. There's definitely a confirmation bias with magic, because you'll remember the one big thing and not the little things. But that's what's annoying about it. There'll be tricks that I have worked on and, you know, are technically difficult, and I'm like doing a top control and a top change and then a bottom control and a false shuffle and all this really technical magic stuff. And then they go, oh, cool. But then I'll show them a picture of their phone, the picture of their card on my phone. Very, very easy trick, and they lose their minds. I'm like, no, that's easy. You don't understand how much time went into the other trick I did, but okay, fine.
With regards to adults versus children, a lot of the times I imagine you guys would have adults in your shows, and obviously in comedy, is it a bit of a skill set to be able to entertain the adults as much as the kids? Because I've definitely seen that you did that, Cameron, and I know, Michael, you'd be doing it too.
Yeah, I think, again, we have a very similar style in the fact that we can very flawlessly go from one age to the other. Part of our old job where I met Michael is you would be working with, you know, 3 months old up to 19-year-olds, and then the parents of those kids. Mm. So you have to be able to adjust. But with my work, I find that the magic I'm doing is almost always the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's the jokes and the patter that changes.
Yeah.
You know, a card appearing behind someone's ear is just as effective for an adult as it is for a kid.
Yep.
You just have to set the joke up differently.
Yeah.
So for a kid, you make it all about how they didn't wash behind their ears and all of a sudden they have dirty ears full of cards. Where a parent, you can, you know, make a couple of not seedy jokes. I don't like to go too blue, but you know, you can have fun with them. They understand the world more, so you can be a little more subtle with stuff and let them fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
I also like that in our shows that we did for Fringe, like, We didn't exact. We did a kid show in the sense that we, you know, it was marketed for kids. It was for kids to come and watch, but we entertained adults as well, right? It's like a general show,
yeah,
a family show. Like the whole family can come, and you could tell that adults during the show were like, "This is actually quite enjoyable." It's quite
a little tagline.
They must have gone to so many kid shows,
yeah,
where they would just, you know, oh, the kids are having a good time and I'll sit through this. But our aim was always to, like, entertain everyone who's in the room.
Yeah.
It's just always
a goal of mine as well. Like, I've been to a few kids shows. I've done a few kids shows, and the bored parents at the back, and I've said to myself before I even started, I said, if I ever do this, like, you need to incorporate the parents. You need to let them have fun as well. And you know, that happens naturally with humor. Kids aren't going to get every joke, and the parents are going to go, ho, 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 at the back. A tagline we came up with for our show is we advertised it as a kid's show for the whole family. And I loved that because that just perfectly lined it up, because you would get a lot of parents coming in through the door. And again, we'd do this soft open and we'd stand at the door and greet people. and you'd have the kids and we'd be like, oh, cool, you've got Batman on your shirt. Yeah, I like Batman. And then you'd make a joke with dad and you see dad like, oh, no, I'm just here for the kids, you know, not doing any, you can't make me laugh. And then you'd have a joke with their dad or get the dad in on a quick magic trick and all of a sudden he's like, oh, yeah, you guys are all right, I guess. And then at the end of the show, you get him up on stage to help Michael onto a unicycle and he's hugging him and having a great time. Like, it's such a good way to get him on.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. It's actually awesome.
Yeah, it's weird that in a lot of, you know, fringe festivals and stuff, it's very hard to advertise a show like this, I find, because if you say, look, it's a kid's show, then people come expecting, you know, it's like Wiggles, the kids are going to enjoy it, I'm not so much, you know. Or if you say, hey, it's a general show, they're like, oh, well, then it's for no one. I'm like, he's got a family show. They're like, oh. So I just want to, how do you explain to people, look, it's a show, everyone will enjoy. You're like, I know that sounds boastful, but it's true.
Just come, please.
Come along with your kids, bring grandma, whatever. You're all going to have a good time.
Yeah, I like it. Actually, we're seeing Cameron work, so it's not offensive. It's fun. And like you said, the humour definitely hit the adults, went over the kids. They laugh anyway. Yeah. Everyone was really into it. And I love that. It's a good family experience.
You can feel the vibe when people aren't enjoying it. Whenever you get someone who's just there for the kids and you don't make that obvious and you don't actually reach out to them, then that travels. It does, like, you know, yeah. It's word of mouth. Like, a positive review only goes so far, but a negative review will spread like wildfire. So yeah, if I see a parent who's on their phone, and I think I did that actually a couple of times at the show I did for you guys, is there's a parent on the phone, and you know, that's fine, parents have to do stuff, they can actually busy, but I called her out and she, you know, kind of like, oh yeah, I shouldn't be on my phone. And then I brought her up on the show and she loved it. And like the whole family was happy because not only, you know, did they get to go see a show, but mum got on stage. So yeah, I think it's important to branch those ages. You don't want to just do kids because then the parents are bored. And if you're doing a general show, then it's kind of like, you're not quite hitting any age in particular. It's just kind of like, here's our jokes. Hopefully they hit for some of you. But yeah, when you actually are adjustable and can adapt to the show, which is, I think, yeah, mine and Michael's skill is adaptability. Like, we could do the same show, not be told what age group we're doing, and just adjust it on the fly. And I think we would have been fine. And that happened a few times because, you know, we had some groups where there was no kids. It was all, you know, like special care givers and their families.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden we can't do a full kids show. But, you know, we have enough skills in our arsenal that we can accommodate for them. And like, yeah, we didn't have a single show that we were like, oh, you know what? I don't think they enjoyed it. We were able to accommodate for every single person.
Yeah. And that's really cool. I'll ask you guys some random questions if that's okay.
Great.
Sure.
All right. So if you could be a character in a book or a TV show, who would it be and why?
Ooh, okay.
This one always stumps everyone, but yeah, I love asking it.
I'd be Willy Wonka from the good movie, not the remake.
Oh, the original.
Yeah.
That's a great movie, the original.
Oh, it's my favorite. It's awesome. Gene Wilder is one of my favorite actors and, yep, again, a huge influence for me on comedy. Him and, like, Young Frankenstein and Willy Wonka, like, really framed my mind as what an actor could be. But I think, yeah, that'd be great because, you know, you're working in this fun factory and you're beloved by all and you get to be very eccentric and some borderline slavery, but other than that, you know, I would change things up at the factory. You know, I would give Oompa Loompas their rights. But yeah, I think that'd be really fun.
And then pretty happy. Come on,
look, let's not get into it.
Have you ever been to Paris?
I've not. No.
I went to Paris a few years ago, and
that's where Oompa Loompas are from.
Is it? No,
I think they're actually in the book. They're from an African country, I believe.
Yeah, I think so as well.
Yeah.
Well, the Eiffel Tower has a glass elevator.
Oh,
and yes, when I was in that, I was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm, you know, the glass elevator, Willy Wonka. And I'm thinking, you know, wow, that's really cool, until I heard it another three times. So everyone feels that way. I felt sorry for the conductors. They hear that all day, every day.
Does it go sideways and diagonally and upwards and downwards and sideways and leftwards? And it's just like, oh, no, no, no. These tourists, I hate them so much.
Michael, what about yourself?
Oh, gee, this really stumped me. I can't. All I can think of now is Willy Wonka movie.
You'd be Grandpa.
I'd be Grandpa. I always wanted to be Tim Brooke Taylor from The Goodies. You know, he's in the 70s Willy Wonka movie. He's the professor, the scientist guy with the computer who's trying to work out where the golden ticket
is. Oh, whoa, I never realized.
I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, I'm now telling you exactly what it can do.
That makes so much sense, because that scene is so funny and it's so out of place. I'm just like, who is this guy? That makes so much sense now. Wow, cool.
That's really rad, actually.
Yeah, so I'd be Tim Brooke Taylor from The Goodies. I always loved that as a kid. I always watched The Goodies.
We need more Goodies show, don't we? Like,
that's great.
A modern day Goodies.
Yeah.
ISO bin, that's kind of goodish.
Yeah, I don't know what it's, I don't know if you can get, like, they had it out on VHS ages ago.
What's that?
They had, like, only 8 episodes, but you can get, like, I think they're releasing some of the seasons. Yeah, you can get the odds. But still not all of the episodes. You can get all of the shows.
So. Wow.
It was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Get out there pirating, guys.
All right, what was the dumbest way you've ever been injured?
This a little bit of backstory. About 6 years ago, I was playing soccer and I just hit a divot in the ground and I destroyed my ACL, my PCL, my MCL, and the cartilage in my knee. So basically everything that moves in my knee except bone was gone. That slowly healed up. I needed surgery, but at the time I was just like, oh, it'll be fine. So that kind of healed itself so I could walk again. And then over the years I would redo it occasionally. The last time it happened before I went back and actually scheduled my surgery is I was getting into bed and I was moving my pillow. And as I knelt down on the mattress, the give in the mattress just pulled my knee down and I just hear a pop.
Oh, no.
And my legs stuck, bent under myself. So I had to, like, very awkwardly get myself out of bed and then drive to the hospital. And they were like, yeah, you've torn your ACL. So they slowly stretched my leg out flat over the course of like an hour with muscle relaxants and stuff, and then put me in a brace and then scheduled my surgery for, you know, the next year. But yeah, kneeling on a mattress, it's very dangerous. Be careful.
That's scary. Michael?
My story, is this, like, this is not performance related. Don't that be performance
related? No, it can be life related.
Oh, okay. Because I cannot count the number of times I've injured myself juggling. Like, I did, I've rammed juggling clubs into my eyes, punched myself in the neck. Like, people always think juggling fire or knives is the most dangerous thing like a juggler can do. It's the unicycle by far. The number of times I've fallen off that thing and, like, twisted ankles and hurt myself. There was a while I was trying to get practice, so I would go shopping, and I would carry the shopping home, the groceries in the bag. Like, each hand would be full of shopping bags, and I'd ride along, and my wife would be walking next to me, and she's like, this is super dangerous. And I'm like, that's not that dangerous. And then I'd flip over, and I'd fall out into the road.
Oh, no.
And, like, drop all the groceries in the road. I just watches, like, cars and, like, crush cans, like, inches away from my hand.
Oh, my God.
Picking one incident is very difficult. But if we don't have to limit it to, like, a juggling-related accident, I had a project in high school where we had to do something. They were, like, learn an old-school craft, right? And I was like, I don't even bother with this. What I'll do is I'll collect up old bits of wax, and I'll melt down that wax and make a candle, which is kind of an old school, you know, skill. So I got a can, an old tin can, and I filled that can with bits of wax from old other candles that were lying around my house. This is when I was a kid. And back then, my family had a big wood oven, wood-fired stove. And I opened the fire compartment, and I put the can in to let the wax melt, put it on the coals of the fire. And I came back in like 5 minutes, and I saw all the wax was melted in the can, but there was a tiny little flame on the top of the wax, and I was like, oh, that's no good. I'll just blow that out. So I held the can up to my face, took a deep breath, and went, blew the can. And of course, the oxygen went into the mixed with like the fumes of the wax, and ignited this fire, and it just this pillar of flames blasted back into my face, and singed all my eyebrows off, all my eyelashes were all curled out. All I could smell was like burning hair. My fringe was all burnt and twisted up.
Oh my god.
So, interesting time.
You're very lucky you didn't end up with facial scars then.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm absolutely very lucky that I didn't get
and he
burning hot wax flicked up in my face.
Hasn't allowed candles in the house since.
Yeah, I'm very anti-candles.
A Frankensteinian fear of flames.
Yeah. I actually burnt my cubby down when I was a kid, and we... We set something alight, and it, much like yourself, Michael, I was trying to blow this thing out, thought it was, you know, okay. It dripped molten stuff on my finger. I've still got a scar from that. So, don't play with fire, guys.
It's funny how little understanding of fire you have when you're a kid, because I grew up in a big yard in Hilton, and we had like, you know, it was full of grass, but every summer it would dry up and just be, you know, covered in weeds, but just like dead. And our fun game we would play with me and the neighborhood kids is like we'd set small fires, let it burn for a bit, and then stomp it out. And I was like, oh yeah, that's so fun. The backyard was, you know, like probably 10 by 20 meters. Like it was a long old school backyard just full of dry brush. Like all it would take is one ember not to be completely extinguished, and the whole block would have gone up because they were all old wooden houses.
Oh, no.
And I look back now, I'm like, oh my God. Like
one wind.
If my kids did that, I'd like – how did we do that? Like, that's what we thought was fun. Just like, yeah, we'll just set a bunch of small fires, you know. It's nothing more fun.
I remember being a kid, and they taught us this in primary school. They said you could, like, you'd get, like, 4 or 5 sheets of paper, and you could glue them together to make sort of a box. And then you could get a tea light candle, and you'd put it at the end of the bag, and you'd light the tea light candle, and it would heat the air inside the paper bag, and it'd float up like an air, hot air balloon.
I remember that.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And
I remember doing it like quite a lot in primary school, and then later, someone was like, you know, that like 4 bushfires started that way, just lighting paper bags and sending them off into the sky. I'm like, yeah, that was super dangerous.
Really pretty, but super dangerous.
Yeah. You just don't think about it as a kid.
You have to attach a safety string to it now so you can bring it back down afterwards.
All right. What is the best smell and worst smell for you guys?
Best smell and worst smell. Can't stand coriander.
Mm.
Hate coriander's taste. Hate the smell of it. And anyone who likes it is dumb.
Oh! Right, this is more fuel for juggling versus magic.
Someone has to coriander.
Best smell. Oh, I've just come back from Margaret River, so petrichor.
Oh, beautiful.
Which, for those of you who don't know, is the smell of a fresh rain on a dry ground. That sort of, yeah, that I think that's a really nice smell.
It is beautiful, yeah.
Best smell, baking bread.
Oh,
I think that's the secret of Subway's success, because you walk past and you're like, that is, smells delicious. And then you order their sandwich and you're like, pretty average. Just the delicious smell that lured me. worst smell?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I don't know. With this baby poo. It's gross.
Yeah, it's pretty gross. Yeah.
She's a little poo machine.
Yeah, showers help, okay? Shower for everything. Shower for noise reduction, now, shower for poo.
the hard thing about the baby poo is sometimes you're like, I'm smelling something. Have you done a poo? And she has done a poo. But then sometimes you smell it and no, she's not done a poo. It's something else. And you just... It's like a phantom poo, you know, you've got
it's a coming.
You're hypersensitive. Anything that's a little, I don't know, there's off milk in the house or something, you're like, there's a poo in the house, here. Like, I have to find it.
Do either of you have a joke that you could share with us?
Yeah, this is my favourite joke. I don't know who originally tells it, though. I've just somehow absorbed it through the years, but it's a very short one. The bartender says, "We don't serve time travelers here." A time traveler walks into a bar. I always liked it.
That's good.
Short and funny. It's a thinker.
I always tell this joke to kids. I'll tell you the joke I tell the kids and then tell you the joke I don't tell the kids.
Okay.
What do you call a salmon in a tuxedo?
What?
Sophisticated. I love that. I tell that to kids.
Perfect.
And then the one I don't tell kids, but I sometimes want to, I go, what's red and bad for your teeth?
What?
A brick.
All right. Can you, if you guys, people are looking for you, how would they find you on social medias?
Very good. So I'm Cameron the Magician on Facebook and Instagram. It's very simple. It's who I am. It's what I do. Cameron the Magician. And that's all I have. Facebook and Instagram. I don't mess with Twitter yet.
Yep.
I'm on everything, but I'm only active on a couple of things. So if you Google Michael Connell Comedian, you'll pretty much find me on everything. I'm on Facebook if you Facebook, Twitter if you Twitter, MySpace if you've got a time machine. that's what they always say. I'm trying to build up YouTube, so I'm trying to be more active on YouTube. Give us some subs. That's a good one. You can watch all my old stand-up specials on there and hopefully new stuff coming soon.
That's great. And do you guys have any shows that you'd like to share?
We're still kind of, at least what we were discussing, we were going to do round two of Juggling vs. Magic, but it looks like Michael might not be able to come across. So just keep an eye out for that and we'll post that on the social medias once everything's decided. Because we might have to do a slightly changed version where I verse a different juggler and Michael versus a different magician. We'll have to see how the borders go. Yeah.
Either that or we get someone else to wheel two like laptops into a room. Like with socially distanced
massive screens.
Battling. Yeah, it'd be great.
Yeah, I may be doing a solo show. Again, I'm just waiting for a few things to come through. So again, that will be all announced through my social media.
Yep.
Michael, are you doing anything over that side of things?
I am doing I'm not sure when this comes out, but I will be doing shows all around Adelaide as restrictions lift. Cranker Comedy, shows at the Rhino Room with Adelaide Comedy, stuff with pop-up comedy, Silly Sausage Sundays. I did that last week and it was really fun. I'll hopefully do one of those in the future. Keep an eye out. Western Australia, hopefully I will be back once they open the border, probably school holidays sometime in the future.
Oh, that's fantastic. And you can find comedy shows with NY Events on nyevents.com.au/comedy. And we've got comedy coming up at Guildford Stirling Arms, Kalamunda Hotel, the Charles Hotel, and up and coming, the Corrine Hotel. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. And thanks for everyone listening in. My name's Yvonne Fletcher and you're listening to Bounce Back. Next week, we've got another couple of really cool comedians coming in. It's a Father's Day special and it's a father and daughter comedian duo. All right, thanks. Thanks, Michael, and thanks, Cameron.
Nice, thanks.
Thanks for having us on.
No worries. See you later.
See ya.
Bye.